Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Talking football with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. By the way, later on in the show, we'll do mean texts as we do every Friday. So for
You can include Clayton on these too.
You want mean Clayton texts? They'd never do such a thing, by God.
Not the professor.
John's got thick skin.
John, would he handle it okay? John, would you handle it all right if people started texting in mean things about you and we read them on the air?
No.
No,
you would prefer not to have that.
It's going
to
be a bunch of country music fans that that text in about you, Clayton.
Good for them. Okay. All I know is I'm proud of Russell Wilson's people for trying to keep him away from country music. Great move by them.
Did you hear that story, Gross?
No.
What's the guy's
role? I didn't know Clayton hated Russell.
His mental coach, Trevor Moad.
His mental coach doesn't want him listening to country music. Stay away from the negativity.
It's too negative.
I wish I had a mental coach.
Yeah.
That would have helped a lot.
Yeah, I think it would help all of us.
Dave?
I can do it, Gross.
Would you?
Sure.
John, do you have a mental coach?
I do not, no.
Okay.
Somebody said since I spent 5 years at Stanford that I'm probably a doctor. I'm like, no. That's
you're a patient.
That means that it took me 5 years to get through what normally people do in 4 years. So
he's a patient.
Out.
John, where are we at with this CBA thing? We were reading some tweets from J.J. Watt, who said something along the lines of a hard pass on that, and Tyler Lockett's saying no on it, and obviously Richard Sherman making his thoughts known. But as Gross pointed out, we're hearing from very few players. Do you feel like most are going to be on board or most against it?
I think it has a shot of passing. You know, they're going to have a meeting now on Tuesday. But
who's they?
The Players Association is going to meet with the NFL owners, and they're also going to have the player reps there. Okay. And then they've got to set up a conference call to see where they stand with the players. And so that's all going to happen next week. So a bunch of stuff happening at Indianapolis. But, we'll see, because I think where they have a chance is that, you take a look that half of the people that are going to be voting are still in their rookie contracts. And so, sure, they don't
really.
Well, because again, because you've got over like 800 guys in the rookie contracts that were drafted, and so do you really want to? And again, they're undrafted guys or all that, and they may take the position if you can get more than 50% of them, maybe they'll do the 17 games. Clearly, the ones that are against it are the guys that have been in the league the longest,
right,
suffered the most injuries, and that's understandable. I mean, I can't fault them for that. But also, if you're going to be in your rookie contract and you don't know how long you're going to be able to play, it may not be a bad idea to take the money now, because if you don't, there's a good chance there's going to be a labor stoppage next year and you're not going to be able to get anything.
Where does gambling come in on all this, John? Because that's supposedly coming, and it just makes me think that for that reason, because they don't really know, I feel like it's going to be a juggernaut, but for that reason, I would think the players would want to go for a shorter deal. Just to see, kind of revisit it here halfway through instead of going for 10 years.
Well, I mean, basically you have no choice. I mean, because again, you know how it is in these labor negotiations. There's so many trade-offs and so many different things, is you're not going to be able to get everything. And so for the security of the TV contracts and everything else, and hey, I agree, they need to have some kind of an opt-out, but they weren't able to get it. And so, you try to get the other things that you can get. And so that's almost a deal breaker for the owners. And so, and remember, they've been working on this thing now for the longest time, and for 10 months, and they came up with this agreement. And if you don't take this agreement, then, and again, it's not like they're shoving it down the throat. I mean, this has been a mutually agreed upon deal with the union and the owners, and so this is what they have, and this is what they're going to vote on. And if they don't, then they got labor problems.
Well, why are the players in the union? So it's funny, because when you talk about the union, you're not really talking about all the players. You're talking about what, DeMaurice Smith?
The Morris Smith, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just weird to me that they're that disjointed, because now all of a sudden you're seeing all these tweets come out, and what did we have from J.J. Watt? A hard no. Russell agreed with it. Tyler Lockett says no deal. It's weird to me.
It is weird because, the Players Association and the negotiators are there to serve the players, and the players, for the most part, don't want 17 games, or at least they verbally say they don't want 17 games. But they also want to have some kind of a deal, and Demora Smith and Eric Winston, you know, want to get a deal done because they realize the damage of not getting one done. They realize that the TV networks are going to be gun-shy about putting in the big dollars, you know, because what they're anticipating is that, you know, there could be a 40% increase in TV revenue. And if that's the case, I mean, you can get the 48.5% of that if you go to 17 games. Now, again, my position would be I wouldn't want to do the 17 games. I think that, but, you know, you also want to see if you can get a deal, and maybe there's a way to go back to the, you know, again, it's going to be a worse deal if they do it, but it go back and say, okay, let's just do 16, forget about the 17, but it's going to be pretty much like the deal they have right now.
You know what the other thing is, and I haven't really even considered, I'm sure people have, what about the records now? Now you got a 17-game season, you got an extra game, and comparing it to seasons past and things like that, I just never, it's not like it's a huge part of this, for sure, but still, it'll be, I guess you're going to have to recalculate things. I mean,
well, was it a big deal when it went from 14 to 16?
What year was that?
78, John?
Yeah.
That's not about right?
78, roughly around there.
I think it was 78.
It's like, it's like it's just reality. It's like, okay, it's like you get more money out of it for everybody involved, and you get more games for the fans, and so that's not bad. But again, it's like, you know, you progress, and that's, it may not, you know, you look at the records and say, okay, who cares?
Well, what's interesting is that from my standpoint, looking at it, you made a very good point about this. This is not the owners, and I'm you know, John, we've talked over the last 30 years. I'm a pro-labor guy when it comes to sports stuff always. But you negotiated this. You did not. This is not the owners trying to unilaterally throw something at the players that they don't want. And I just look at Demora Smith and leadership and think they've done a terrible job of keeping guys informed on what they were doing. Mm-hmm. If there's this much opposition to this after you've already come to an agreement, then I would expect the owners to pull a hard line on this. Why wouldn't they?
Exactly. Again, it's like they spent 10 months. This is the best deal that both sides came up with. And now it's a matter of like, okay, if you didn't want to go that direction, why'd you spend 10 months negotiating like this?
Right. I mean, it's just, to me, he's the guy on the hot seat. If I was the players, I'd say we've got the wrong guy leading us.
Mm-hmm. No, I can't argue with that. I think that's a very valid point. And if they don't get it done, I mean, the league is probably not going to have a lot of football next year.
Yeah, and it looks like Jarvis Landry tweeting out, looks like y'all better start getting y'all XFL TV packages together, implying a work stoppage. So you feel like that's a very real possibility?
Oh, I do, yeah. I think that because, you know, they'll have to take a hard line, and, you know, the problem is that, you know, they're not going to have the leverage to be able to get much more than what they're getting now.
You don't anticipate the owners sweetening the deal at all, that this is the best offer they're going to get?
No, the only thing they can do is maybe readjust it and just do a 16-game schedule. But again, that 16-game schedule is going to take away a lot of the benefits. I mean, they're not going to get the 48% or the 48.5%. They're not going to get the big increase in the the money that's going to go in benefits, and it's going to go in all these different things. I mean, it's just going to be pretty much a standard deal, pretty close to what they have right now.
Why haven't the owners been more proactive when it comes to health care? We were looking at how they do things in baseball, how they do it in basketball. In the most physical, violent sport of them all, does the very least when it comes to that. And it feels like they could have really gotten out in front of some of these issues they've had, whether we're talking CTE or some of the bargaining issues they're having now, if they just said, you know what, we're handling health care for former players and current players moving forward. But they elected not to do that. It seems like, on the surface, a simple fix for a multi-billion-dollar industry, you're talking about a drop in the bucket.
Well, yeah, but understand that you know, money is put aside for the benefits, and that's decided by the union, not the owners. It's like a you got your big package because, you know, basically, you know, you have your the salary cap, and then you have about maybe, you know, $5 million, $7 million a team, whatever the number is going to be, that's going to be tied up in the going over to benefits. And it's like, okay, it's like we'll give you the money, and the Players Association has to understand what they want to do as far as the benefits. That's not an owner's thing. I mean, owners will continue to try to, you know, work with the union, work with different scientists and things like that to make the game safer. But, you know, there's no way that the owners should be blamed for anything like that, because it's like, okay, what do you want as far as benefits? And here's the percentage, and here's the money we're going to go to. And there's more money that goes into benefits in each of these deals.
So the owners' vote wasn't unanimous on this, was it?
No.
So I mean, there are some owners who don't like this deal, too?
Yeah. Yeah, because, again, it's like you're not going to find everybody on board, but there's at least more than three-quarters of the owners that were on board.
What would the owners not like about this deal? What do you have any – I mean, we know what the players don't like. What would the owners be not liking about
it? I mean, maybe they don't like the 17 games. I mean, you figure the owners probably do because it's more money in their pocket.
They definitely like the 17 games.
Yeah.
That's so coming from them.
Yeah,
well, there's got to be the percentage, right? I mean, that's really from their standpoint.
One of the things that is a more complicated thing is, you know, stadium credits are all part of this, and they haven't put anything out about the stadium credits. But you know, some of the owners may not like to shorten the preseason games taken down to three. Some of the other owners may not like the fact that they're doing international games and kind of again. And you have a lot of traditionals in the league. Like you figure the Bengals are probably one of the teams that voted against it. You figure the Raiders were one of the teams that probably voted against it. But again, I'm sure that the vote was pretty close to being unanimous. But a couple teams are always going to object.
The international games is something that's kind of floating on the radar, too, because we're not just talking about London and Mexico City, are we?
No, we're talking
they mentioned Brazil and Germany.
Yeah, Germany, and I don't know about Canada, but yeah, you're talking about a whole bunch there.
Hate that.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Hate it.
Do you remember Saturday Night Live? Germans love David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
Germans love the Seahawks. When we were in London, there was a whole contingent of German people.
Well, remember
there.
NFL Europe? The last year or two, John, was exclusively in Germany. It did extremely well in Germany, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so and right now there's roughly five games that are international, and you know they're not going to be able in a short period of time in 2 years to get it up to 16. I think they'd like to, but then that's why they have to try to do some balancing acts as far as if they go to 17, you know, which teams for 1 year will get the nine home games and which teams will get the nine road trips, and they'll balance that out. But again, it's like, you know, that those are minor things right now. The big thing right now is getting the players, if they wish to accept whatever it is, to go to the 17 games.
That was Norm MacDonald, by the way. I thought he was a very underrated newsman at SNL.
I thought he was one of the best.
John, Bruce Irvin, what did he make, about $4 million last year?
$4 million, yeah.
Yeah. What about him back here?
I think it'd be a good move.
I do, too. I heard that there was some texting or tweeting or whatever you call it going on between him and Cam Chancellor, trying to get him back out here. And
I like that Cam's recruiting for the Seahawks. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, and there was never a problem with him, right?
Oh, no.
I mean,
he's a holdout. I mean, you're talking about Bruce?
Yeah.
No, there's no problems with him.
Yeah, I don't think
he had the one, I think, PED suspension, but that was about it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
But he wasn't even having problems with his teammates.
No, not at all.
Well, and also, as I recall, I think that was early on. It might have been in 12 or 13 when, because he was part of that awesome draft, which a lot of people call the best draft in NFL history in 2012.
One of them, for sure.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a lot of teams, you think, lining up for his services?
Not really, no. I think that there'll be some, but... you know, for $4 million, if not a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, I don't think it's a bad move. And I think that, remember, when he was cut by the Raiders, the Seahawks thought they had a good chance to get him, and he was very seriously thinking about it. But then he had the chance to go down to Atlanta, which was his hometown, and so he didn't come to Seattle.
Yeah, so there's not, I know, I remember he had 8.5 sacks last year, had a sack on Russell when we went out to Carolina. But yeah, I didn't think that there was ever anything. He didn't leave on...
he left on good terms.
Yeah, bad terms.
So here's the deal, John. Tua's going to the Cowboys, right? Tom Brady's going to sign as a free agent for 2 years. Prescott's gone, and they're going to sign Tua.
Wow.
That's fantastic, Ross.
I saw someone come up with that rumor.
I know. It's as stupid as Emmitt Smith trying to tell Dak Prescott to take a hometown discount.
Yeah, I've got to be going over like a lead balloon.
You know, it's stupid. I mean, it's like, why would you say something like that? Stay out of other people's business. It's like, okay, I mean, you had to hold out, but you got your money. And one of the big reasons is Charles Haley took his helmet and slammed it against the wall right in front of Jerry Jones, telling him to get the deal done.
So what, as far as Amari Cooper goes, where would he end up if the Cowboys don't bring him back?
Some people think Philadelphia, because Philadelphia is so starved for good wide receivers that they may go ahead and try to, you know, pay him big money to come there. And, of course, it would be in the division. Of course, I don't know how popular that's going to be with the Cowboy going to Philadelphia. But as far as a player, that could be one that could work.
All right, John. So you shuffling through the mail there? What do you guys
reading
there?
Free agency.
John, do you have your database going?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, good. All right, what about Jack Conklin? There are a lot of people talking about him coming here, playing offensive line. I don't know why. We got some texts on this yesterday.
I didn't think
that O-line was that big of a problem. The only problem last year was the injuries. The injuries are, you know, they were the number three rushing team.
They didn't feel like a good pass-blocking line.
No. I mean, look, Russ gets sacked a lot. No matter what, if you go through and look at every year, he's been, every year except for two, he's been in the top 10 as far as most sacked quarterbacks. The other thing that's discouraging about that, three of his 8 years, he's been dead last in pass attempts. So, I mean, he's a guy, I think, that makes decisions. This is kind of off topic here, but I think he makes decisions that lead to those sometimes. But, yeah, he's been number six, number 10, number eight, number nine, most sacked quarterback almost every year. 8 out of 10, he's been in, you know, the top 10, and yet he doesn't pass that much. And so it leads me to believe that there's a lot of times he takes sacks that other quarterbacks wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. But I think the big thing when you're starting to look about what they should do on the offensive line, and, you know, you can pretty well guess that they're not going to bring a Fetty back, and it may be tough to do things with George Fant. And so they've got to do something. But do you think that if you're putting money on this team, are you putting it on the offense or are you putting it on the defense? And I think you have to put it on the defense because, you know, what's the disparity? I mean, offensively, they're, what, top 10 offense. They score over 25 points a game. They have good talent at the wide receiver. Now they've got Greg Olsen at the tight end position, and they do have issues on the offensive line. But the big problem is finishing 26th on defense and only having 28 sacks. I mean, those are the things that need to be fixed. And so, you know, they need to find out what to do to challenge Trey Flowers, who to bring in for that, and how many – because remember, you have five guys that are free agents on the defensive line. And so Jack Conklin, I don't think that's a luxury that they can really afford. Now, again, he'd be a great right tackle. He comes in at the right age, all those different things. But, that takes away, maybe $10 million a year you can spend on defense.
So you think he's $10 million?
What's that?
Conklin's $10 million
guy? Oh, no, it'll be 14 to 15.
Oh, wow.
No, I agree with you, John. I think, I was joking about Brady before, but Bill Belichick did not spend a ton of money in most years putting offensive weapons for Tom Brady. He had a few.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't without them, but that's not where they spend a bulk of their money. And I think you can kind of have the same approach with Russell Wilson, can't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, because to say what you want, again, Russell still has the ability to avoid some of these things, and, as much as he'd like to have a good young tackle, because, Conklin's 26 years old, but do you really want to pay him 15 a year? I mean, you start to go down the list, and you say, okay, do you want to have a 31-year-old Brian Bulaga, who makes 10, probably would have to get 12 to 13? That might be too much. I'm thinking Ifedi's going to get about 8.1. I mean, here's a guy that I think, could be a candidate is Darrell Williams from Carolina. Because he's had some injury problems in the last year or two, but he's 27 years old. I think he can probably, he's making $6.6 million last year. I think that you can get him at a good price. DeMar Dotson's a candidate, but he's 34, so you don't want to do that. I mean, would you rather pay a defensive lineman, a pass rusher? Would you rather play Clowney, or would you rather put $15 million into Conklin? I don't think you have the luxury on Conklin.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John, you brought up Trey Flowers and providing competition for him and things like that. Would Prince Amukamara be a guy that you think the team would be interested in? He's a former first-round pick who, in my opinion, hasn't lived up to that first-round pick status, but he's been okay. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he could be. I mean, he was making $9 or $10 million a year before he was cut today, but he's long, he's angular, he's still at a good young age, and you can probably get him, at like maybe 5, 6, or 7. And so, he'd be a consideration, and he doesn't take away a compensatory pick.
All right, John, when's this thing come together? So getting back to the CBA,
yeah.
When do you think this thing finally gets, it's just so odd, this whole thing. And I know we're not hearing much from the players other than what they're tweeting, but what's your prediction overall once it's all said and done?
Well, it has to get done sometime, I think, next week, because the combine is usually the time when both sides sit down and try to figure out what the cap is going to be and how you're going to go into free agency, because we're almost at that deadline. Now, again, you can take it to March 18th. I mean, that's not fortunate. I mean, you can still do that. But I think things have to come together next week. And, you know, at some point, and this is more on the players than it is the owners, it's like, okay, you want to say yes or no to the deal. If you say no, hey, get ready, you know, save your money and get ready to go on strike next year. Wait for a lockout.
You know, it's funny you said they're all going to get on a conference call. It's kind of weird for something that's just worth billions and billions of dollars. Shouldn't everybody be flying there in a private jet to the same place and all meet face to face?
They tried that this week, and the problem, I think, you know, because it's really cold and got bad weather on the East Coast, and that not everybody could make it, and so because of that, they had to put everything more on a conference call. But that was the plan, to have the 32 player reps fly in, and then there would be a big conference call with the 2,000 players.
Well, I mean, I guess you look at it, you got 32 seasoned businessmen and women, and then you have 32 players who are smart guys, sure, but I mean, it's not like this is business that they're doing here, and I just feel like they're always going to be not quite as put together as the owners are as far as that goes, and that's why you need good leadership, and we just haven't had that. So I'll say that like three or four more times this year before,
I'm sure you will, man.
Today before the show's over, because it's frustrating to me that they don't have, like you said, Graza, Marvin Miller type of guy.
Yeah, they've started at the bottom. John, you a fan of the show Westworld?
Never seen it.
Never seen. Are you going to watch it? Marshawn Lynch is going to be in the new season.
I guess. I mean, it's on HBO, right?
Yeah.
At least I can watch it because I have HBO. So I guess.
Well, then you've got no excuse. You've got to watch, right?
Yeah.
Hey, are you on Comcast where they took a bunch of the stations away? Stars.
I think they take away everything.
Those and put on something
rotten.
Weird.
Yeah.
Old movies, old westerns from the 50s.
Man, that's lame. Frustrating.
Lame,
very
John.
Lame. Quite lame. Hey, by the way, XFL, St. Louis, Battlehawks, they expect 28,000 for their home opener.
That'd be a little shy of what the Dragons did, right?
John, you going to the Dragons game?
Yeah, Dragons had 29,000.
Not going tomorrow, no.
No,
but it's funny because I do a couple segments a week in St. Louis, and we were talking about it on Wednesday that it's amazing that St. Louis and Seattle are the two hottest markets in the XFL. Mm. I mean, you can see there's great interest, there's great ratings. I mean, you know, with 28,000 going to the game in St. Louis, and of course their ratings have been great, not as good as Seattle's, but I think those are the two hottest cities in the XFL.
We got to get you to a game, John. I will buy you a beer, and you are going to a game where you don't have to work. It's kind of, it feels good.
That would be different.
Let's do it.
Get him a glass of wine.
When's the last time you went to a game you didn't work at, John?
Probably.
He was 12.
A little younger than that. I think probably when I was like 7.
He's been working since
Clayton
7.
Was compiling databases.
I believe
at age
it.
8.
Wasn't
nine.
No, there was no databases back then.
Yeah, it was called a notebook.
Yeah, it is.
Standing there with a notepad. Hey, John, good stuff. You doing your show tomorrow?
Doing it tomorrow, and we may not get together on Monday because after I get done with the show, then I start flying out to Indy. So I may miss you on Monday, but I'll definitely be with you on Tuesday.
All right. Well, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. The Professor John Clayton with us every day here with Bob, Dave, and more. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and it's free. That's the best price there is. Free. Download it. Take us with you wherever you go. Coming up, who are some of the young Mariners we should be watching? Again, spring training games scheduled to start this weekend, weather permitting. We'll talk to Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. He's going to talk to us a little Mariner baseball next. It's Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Outside the snow is
melting. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Mariner baseball happening this weekend. Spring training gets underway in the way of games. Scheduled anyway. We'll see what the weather is going to say about that. But joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, a man who covers the team for the Seattle Times, the one, the only, Ryan Divish is here. How are you, Ryan?
What's up, fellas?
How is the weather report looking? Do you expect the games to get off this weekend?
I don't think they're going to play tomorrow. I think they'll play on Sunday, but it looks like it's supposed to rain pretty much every day or pretty much all day Saturday, which is a change because it's been like 80 or 75 or 80 for the entire first week or so. I mean, like my tan is looking solid, Shannon's looking a little sunburnt, but I know that you guys have finally gotten sunshine for the first time in the decade.
yeah.
up there this year.
Yeah. Does all this make you grumpy, Divish?
No, no. I even went to the Moon Saloon, had some beers. You know, it's been good. Sunshine, vitamin D, you know, all that good stuff. It's been okay.
I love the
Moon
Saloon.
I'm fueled by the youth and enthusiasm of this team. Okay, that's not true. But I am fueled by... I'm fueled by sunshine and beers later at night.
In all honesty, have you ever seen a team this young at spring training in all the years you've been covering it?
No, I have not. I mean, my first spring training was 2008. And from there, it's been, you know, they've always kind of tried to win. You know, they didn't always do it very wisely, and they didn't always do it with the best roster setup or construction. Or the money, the best investment of the money involved. But I mean, you know, in the Howard Lincoln years, the idea of a rebuild was not going to happen under his watch. He would not say those words. And so, you know, last year when they traded off all those guys going into last year's spring training, but they brought in some pieces to kind of just fill it out. And then this year you put in all these prospects and, you know, you're projecting guys. I mean, Kyle Seager will be the oldest guy. Kyle Seager and Dee Gordon will be the two oldest guys on the team. And they probably have the average age of around 25 or 26. They're going to be probably the youngest team in the American League. I've never seen anything like it.
How do you, you know, we've talked to a couple of these guys, you know, veteran like Marco Gonzalez, and I asked him, how do you approach a season where basically the front office and everybody in charge has said, yeah, this year, not so much about winning. It's more about developing the youth, and we're looking to the, you know, the future in terms of competing. It's got to be a tough thing to hear at the beginning of a season before it even starts. As a guy that covers the team, does it make it harder or easier when you know, hey, I'm watching the future and it's going to be exciting to watch young guys develop versus, hey, let's hope this team can scrape together 86 wins and maybe find the way into the wild card?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's tangible what they're doing in terms of who they're playing and why they're playing it. Like, last year when they had Tim Beckham, the rotting corpse of Tim Beckham at shortstop, and wondering like, what the hell are they doing out there? You know, you're thinking to yourself, okay, how is this making them better? How is this helping them become the organization that they're trying to become? And there have been plenty of players like that in the past where you brought these guys in, these retreads and never will be's, and think, okay, what the hell are they doing? But, you know, this kind of plan of playing the young guys, you can sit there and say, well, every time that Kyle Lewis takes the field, good or bad, it represents something for next year and the year beyond. And I think that's important. But at the same time, like what you were saying about asking Marco and these veterans, what Marco and even Kyle Seager on some level and maybe Dee Gordon need to impart on these guys is, yeah, in the 20,000-foot picture of this season, they aren't expecting success or wins or a ton of wins or, you know, even, you know, less than 100 losses, I mean, which is a reasonable expectation. But I think they can expect to go out and try and win every night and do the things and play the game the right way so that they are competitive every night. You know, there's a difference between being expected to be good for an entire season, but on any given night, your level of effort, your competition level, the way you perform should be commensurate with trying to win. You know, they have to learn how to play the game properly and not accept, look, we might be terrible or nobody thinks we're going to be any good, so it's okay if I make these mistakes. Scott Service and the other as the manager and then the other veteran players need to hold them accountable and say, look, whether or not this team thinks it's going to be good this season, you have to play the game a specific way and you have to compete a specific way if you're going to ever be any good in the future.
Ryan, I had this conversation today with somebody in here, and I said, yeah, this Jared Kelenic kid, I really want to watch him and get an eye on him because, you know, Service said he was the best workout he'd ever seen. And the other person said, yeah, that's what they said about Dustin Ackley. But my response was, Dustin Ackley always looked sad. He was always up at the plate. He had like a sad expression on his face. And this kid's cocky, from what I understand. Have you gotten a chance to talk to him and kind of take in some of that, this Jared Kelenic kid?
Yeah, I think when you talk about Ackley, I think Griffey once said something like, that's the oldest looking 24-year-old I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, just how he walked, you know, he's all banged up. No, Kelenic, you like this. Kelenic was telling us about playing football. And he said that he would try and hit guys so hard on defense as a linebacker and safety that he would actually hurt himself.
So oh, Dave likes that.
Stop playing football. But yeah, he like there's a self-assurance level of Jerry Kelenic. He's quite self-confident in his abilities, and it's kind of cool to see. Like, you know, he's talented. He knows he's talented, and he isn't afraid to show that. You know, they talk trash around the batting cages, you know, him and Julio back and forth. I think the other day, Carson Vitale made the comment that Kelenic hadn't hit a homer during BP, and he said, well, do you want Julio to show you how to elevate the ball? And the next round, Kelenic hit 7 home runs in a row, turn around, looked at Carson, he goes, is that good enough for you? So, I mean, I think nice. Like that, you know, the talent that they have on the field right now, like Larry Stone and I were talking about it, and that guy's been around since they played without helmets. He was talking just about how physical and athletic and big and strong these guys are in Howtown. It's one of the most talented groups of young people we've seen from the Mariners.
One of the interesting signings, I don't know if it's getting a lot of talk about, is the Evan White signing, a guy in double, hadn't played beyond double A, signing him the way they did. What are your expectations for him this year? I mean, obviously he's going to be the starting first baseman, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, they're not starting Daniel Vogelbach there, that's for certain. Yes. I mean, I think there's a trust factor involved in all this. For the Mariners, I mean, even at $24 million, that's not a massive investment over the course of 8 years. But they trust that Evan White, at least from, you know, even at the baseline level of who he is right now, will help them at the big league level. I mean, he is the best defensive first baseman I've seen, you know, in person since I saw Mark Grace play as a kid, or since John Olerud, when I saw John Olerud, who was declining in his years in Seattle, but was still had just amazing hands. He's the best first baseman I've seen. It was a funny day. They were doing a play, and he did the splits at first base and dug a ball out. And I'm thinking, yeah, I don't think Vogelbach is doing that one there. So the big question will be whether he hits. And, you know, from what I've been told from the organization is like exit velocities and contact rate and everything have been as high as anybody else in the organization. He just doesn't quite elevate the ball like Kelenic or Julio or Kyle Lewis, and they've worked with him to elevate the ball more, so you know he's not hitting these line drives or hitting hard ground balls, but the ball's going in the air and carrying. He's put on about 10 to 15 pounds. He's really big and physical, and he can run. I mean, I think from that aspect, from an athletic standpoint, a defensive standpoint, he's big league ready. Whether or not the hitting comes along, we'll see, because he's never played above double A. But, you know, in terms of work ethic and attitude, he's one of the best guys on the team. Like, I always joke that he's the nicest guy in camp, because he really is. He's super polite and really easy to deal with. But I've been told that he has a competitive streak, and a little anger will come out of from him. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles the season.
Hey, Ryan, quickly before we hit the break here, you brought up Vogelbach. Where does this guy fit in? Because I've been hard on him, and people know that, and I root for him to be great. I just don't think he is. And, you know, people always want to throw his on-base percentage back to me. I'm thinking, that's great. We got a guy who can't run clogging up the base pass sitting on first base because he can walk. I just don't get how he fits. Am I missing something with him, or what are your expectations?
You know, in terms of what this organization's at and what they've been looking for, no, he doesn't fit their profile, because they've wanted athletes that can play defense, that are versatile, that can do different things, and he does not fit that. I mean, there is a tangible skill of hitting the ball out of the park, but, I mean, he looked completely overwhelmed the second half. I thought he looked fatigued. I thought he looked tired. I thought he gained weight during the season, which is very hard for players to do. And you know, he looked overwhelmed by lefties. So I think they're going to control his usage this year. He won't face a lot of tough lefty starters. He'll hit mostly against righties, and maybe they have something. But, I mean, you know, going forward, you know, I don't know how he fits, but he's a nice fill-in gap until maybe they're good and he has a smaller role. But to be the established Nelson Cruz type that maybe some people thought, no, that's probably not going to be him.
Ryan, good to talk to you, man. Look forward to seeing you out there. Have fun. Hopefully you get some sunshine this weekend, and we'll talk soon.
All right. See you guys in a few weeks.
Thanks, there you Ryan. Go. There's Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. A little look at what's going on with the Mariners. Spring training game starting this weekend. Meanwhile, did you catch Marshawn Lynch in the trailer for Westworld? Apparently he's got a big role this season, we're hearing. We'll hear more about it when we sweep the dial with Bob, Dave, and Moore. The Gras in today on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
You feel me, though? Take care of y'all mentals, because, look, we ain't lasting that long. You know, I had a couple players that I played with that, you know what I mean, they no longer here no more. They no longer. So, I mean, you feel me? Start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken. So when y'all ready to walk away, you walk away and you be able to do what you want to do.
Get all that, Gross? How's your chicken?
I got the chicken.
You got your chicken?
Got my chicken.
Your mentals okay?
That's my favorite part.
The mentals are wobbling.
Take care of your mentals.
My mentals are wobbling, but my chicken is good.
Okay, good. Well, that's the voice of Marshawn Lynch, in case you didn't know that. And he's worked his way into season 3 of Westworld, which we were talking about before the show. I don't know if you guys have watched it or you watched it, Gross.
I watched the first season.
I didn't get it.
I didn't either.
It was a show I really wanted to like, because a lot of the actors in it I liked, and I thought it was interesting looking. And then by the end of the season, I was like, I don't know what the hell's happening here.
All right, well, I'll stay away from it, because we were just talking about...
You haven't watched it either?
Breaking Bad. The only Westworld I ever saw involved Yul Brynner. You remember that?
Yeah.
That was a movie from the 70s,
yeah,
where he's a robotic cowboy.
This is loosely based on that.
Okay.
It's sort of the same concept.
I feel like Marshawn can be a good actor.
I think he fits in that show.
Remember his other line from his acting debut we had years ago? Relax. That was his line. Relax. I don't know if that movie ever came out or what that was, but
there's a news flash. I think it's hard to act.
I'm guessing it is.
I was asked to do a car commercial one time, and it was a few years ago, and I was standing in a room, and they're like, "Oh, you got to smile more, and you got to do this." And I was like, "No, can't."
You never
do
acted
it.
As a kid or anything like that?
No.
Actually, I did some comedy when I was in my 20s. I loved it.
My wife did, when she was a Seagal, she did this commercial for a Dodge dealership where she has a cowboy hat, and at the end of every commercial, she goes, "Yeehaw!" And so I cut those up and put it on her when she turned 40, and I made this whole thing, pictures from her life when she was younger, videos from when we got married, and then I just interspersed those like every
Yeehaws,
30, right in the middle of everything.
Every 30 seconds.
Hi, I'm Shannon.
Is that one of those that you never got tired of, but then she eventually got tired of them?
She just laughs at it now.
Oh, that's good.
But, yeah, it's not a problem. But she said for a really long time people would come up to her around town and go, "Yeehaw!"
Sure, that didn't get old.
You did it! Oh, there's your shirt.
Sweet.
Oh, look. Oh, that's a cool shirt. The Big Texan. Amarillo. Look, we got another t-shirt to add to the collection.
So that's Raven center Bradley Bozeman.
Yeah, saw this.
Crushed a legendary eating challenge in Texas, devouring a 4.5-pound steak, shrimp cocktail, baked potatoes, salad, and butter roll in 50 minutes. 16,
32. You know, I was asking,
trying to think if that was the old 96er. I guess it's not quite that big.
I was asking Maura to, you know, show me a picture of the steak, and we could just see it from like a distance, but it looks like a cake. It's like the size of a cake.
That's a giant slab
of
meat.
He did it in 70, did you say 72 minutes?
No.
52 minutes.
5-0.
Incredible.
Yeah, but it was shrimp cocktail, as well as a baked potato, as well as salad and butter roll.
Now, you know what doesn't belong in that sentence?
Salad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Salad?
But that's just more stuff in the belly.
I think it's more for, the other end. And the whole thing, it helps facilitate.
Gotta get your roughage.
Helps the evacuation.
That's a good word.
69 ounces of steak.
That is?
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
4.5 pounds.
That's a lot of steak.
Of meat in your stomach right there. Goodness.
Couldn't do it.
Ugh.
To me, if I could choose what team I want to play on, as far as my favorite team growing up, then I'd probably tell you the Cowboys. But, I mean, they're so far down.
Bump Dak Prescott.
No, I'm not trying to bump them. I'll learn under them, you know.
You'd be willing to learn.
That's the voice of
rookie
Tua,
move.
Tua Tagovailoa. Yeah.
Rookie move.
Not even a rookie yet, and he makes a rookie move.
Saying
you,
that.
You just say, oh, I'm just going to be happy and blessed to be in the NFL. Whatever team takes me, I'm going to, God willing.
I guess
sometimes it rains. What was the line from Bull Durham, where he tells the kid, tells Luke LaRouche, Nuke LaRouche, to go. And
Nuke LaRouche.
I'm just screwing the whole thing up. But anyways,
I don't remember it, but you're right.
This kid, I don't know. I mean, he sounds like a nice guy, and I'm sure he's being perfectly innocent about it, but yeah,
right,
this
is not Joe Burrow trying to avoid the Bengals.
No. No, so
he's not going number one anyway.
Right. And this is okay, but he does say, well, it's just so far down.
No, Tua.
Oh. What?
You know, you're right. Bob was saying to me as you were talking that he's not going number one. I said, no, Burrow's going to go number one. Tua's not.
Bob was asking you a question, which doesn't happen very often.
Bob asks questions. Never.
Groz had the best line when I was peppering somebody with questions, and he said, yeah, that's not going to be good enough. You're going to have to do better. Yeah. There'll be more questions.
Answers. Just like,
I'm going to start giving
you're
Bob.
Not doing it right.
I'm going to give Bob the Tom Catlin. He was our coach. He was very stoic, and he would drop. You know, I'm going to draw up the defense that we're going to install. Save your questions to the end. So sometimes I need to say that to Bob. He's like, wait, what? He did what? Who was that?
I just love Groz chiming in.
Say that?
That's not going to be good enough. You're going to have to do better. He's not going to stop.
I went one time, you started asking Taylor Jacobs about tennis shoes. Or sneakers, whatever you call
them. Yeah, he's a collector.
Yeah, and so I heard three or four of questions, went downstairs, went to the little market down there where there's free food and you can just grab it and take it. You don't even have to pay for it. It's a joke. And so then I came back up.
And the questions were still
They were still
firing.
Going.
Yeah,
and there was like another seven questions. Like, dude, you're talking about sneakers.
It's kind of fascinating.
Bob gets curious at times.
Yeah.
He was very curious.
Curious guy.
Bob hungers for knowledge.
Dave will sit on the other side of the room and go, that's six. Yeah. Seven. There's eight. Doing the countdown. All right. Good stuff. Again, we've got Mean Text coming in, and we'll do that segment coming up in a little while in the next hour. But we've got Groz here. We've got Dave here. So we've got an extended version of story time.
Today is a very good day for this segment.
Perfect. We got the right storytellers here. So you're going to want to, you know, pull up a nice comfy blanket, a seat, sit cross-legged in front of us.
Cup
and we're
going to
dazzle you with stories next with Bob, Dave, and more with the Groz in on 710 ESPN Seattle.